Hello and welcome to the Liberation Podcast, an exploration of what it means when we say our liberation is bound in each other. Through interviews and personal dialogue, we will dissect just how liberation is experienced by the individual and how in result manifests in their communities. Let's get started. Hello, welcome back to the Liberation Podcast. I'm your host, Safara Parrott. Thank you so much for tuning in and joining me on this episode. Today, I am joined with head organizers Paige McKay and Charlie James of Coffee Workers of the South United. They are the first coffee shop unionized in Nashville, Tennessee, second in the state of Tennessee. They are both joining me in conversation, talking about labor rights within the service industry and how they kind of came to the realization that this was some work that needed to be done and what that looks like to start that conversation within the workplace, what it looks like to even like personally come to that realization that... I think Charlie talks about it quite a lot, and Paige in different forms talks about how what it is to like abolish the manager in your mind or really shed the kind of like service industry film out of the eyes and look at it in a very honest and brutal way of like, okay, this is labor. I am working class. People that are without a title in any kind of industry, they are working class, which means they are likely being oppressed, being exploited. They are in many ways being told to carry the emotional and physical burden of the economy. If we remember in the early pandemic, people called them essential workers, and outside of, you know, hospitals being open and like the actual frontline people of the pandemic that like basically have no choice to because they work in healthcare. Everyone else is not an essential worker. Like, no one needed to come and get a latte from me during the pandemic, but it surely happened. And, you know, Charlie and Paige and myself, we all worked through the pandemic. I only had a few weeks off. And so all of that has just been really burdened and really prevalent in the last 2 years. And because of that, we've seen an immense type of uprising within labor rights, specifically in warehouse working and also service industry and then farming industry as well. And these are all, I talk about a little bit in the in our conversation, but they're all also like, if we think back when we think about unionizing and we think about when we think about, you know, the labor strikes and whatever, the early 1900s, mid 1900s, up until about the 70s, early 70s, we think of like auto industry, coal, paper mills, like whatever. And we think of this kind of like really old contextualized understanding of what working conditions were, or we think of like child labor or whatever. But we have to modernize our idea. Just as capitalism modernizes, we have to modernize our identity within the working class and how, what it actually means to be kind of like run by the system. And I think service industry, especially in a touristy town like Nashville, like service industry is the new like coal industry in the terms of it dictates your quality of life. It dictates your ability, your mobility within like society. It dictates your access to healthcare. It dictates all of these things. And I think it's really important to shift our focus for people who live in or people who work within the service industry. Like, even if you don't end up, you know, starting your own uprising or starting your own union or whatever, it's important to be able to see yourself in that honesty and being like, oh, work. Okay. I I can see, I can be able to, like, through this new mindset, I am able to see clearly how in my workplace or in other people's workplaces, I am being exploited, which means if you have the power to see it, you have the power to talk about it. And that means, like, not turning a blind eye to wrongdoings. That also is huge about harassment. Sexual harassment in the service industry is appalling. It is possibly every single day that it happens, in my workplace and other people's workplaces. Like, it happens, so much. And, you know, that is not okay. People, women and other people should feel safe at work when they are literally just trying to pay for their life. So that is what we are talking about today. We are talking about labor. And I thought going into the conversation, it was going to be a little bit more, maybe geared towards, like, the theory of unionizing and, like, I don't know, that kind of more academic sense of it, because I feel like maybe that's on me, that a lot of labor discussions are talked about in that specific, in that really theoretical, esoteric way. But what the conversation really turned out to be more of is, what does it mean to see your work environment? What does it mean to see each other within a work environment? What does it mean to not simply accept the exploitation or accept sometimes in many workplaces the abuse that happens to you? What does it mean to turn the power dynamic and disrupt that system? And what does it look like to actually step up for yourself, step up for each other, and demand something better, something that is sustainable? And that's an incredibly empowering conversation to have, and I think it's a really great stepping stone for anyone who even just feels someone who just feels uncomfortable or disempowered in your workspace, of being like, maybe you simply are just trying to ask for a raise, maybe you are just, like, trying to tell a GM that you actually don't like the way that they communicate to you and you wish that they would try a different approach or whatever. You are well within your bounds to speak for yourself and demand that you just be treated appropriately. And so I really appreciate Paige and Charlie for bringing that to the surface and bringing it, or making it a very foundational point in this conversation. We also touch on misconceptions of the South, and misconceptions of what the labor, like, unions mean, what labor uprising means, what labor organizing means. So much of it is heavily intersectional, and foundationally, so much of it has been led by Black and Indigenous people because they are at the bottom of the totem pole when it comes to labor. I mean, I can go on and on about how, I mean, slavery, am I right? That was 260 years worth of free labor and exploited labor. And then another almost 100 years of, or no, a full 100 years of more exploited labor. And Indigenous people, their labors of nature and labors of cultivation have been completely erased, at sometimes made illegal. And immigrants who come in and are trying to make a better life for themselves or trying to find stability, and their humanity gets put in jeopardy by being in these, like, fucked up, faulty, like, exploitive systems when it comes to, like, farming industry. All of these things are incredibly intersectional. And as I said before, like, sexual harassment is huge. Gender identity and sexual orientation, like, those are hugely discriminated. All of these play into neurodivergency as well. All of these things play into what this exploitive system works under. And that's just capitalism. But it is an intersectional, base level thing. We all work because we all live under capitalism. We're not turning over capitalism anytime soon. So we have to acknowledge the base level of, we are all working under the system, which means we are all on the same playing field, which means that we are all equal, or we are all able to see ourselves equal in value, which means we can all fight for a better chance to be able to be sustainable, be able to thrive together and build community out of it. ways to support Coffee Workers of the South United, you can follow them on Instagram, and they have all the links in their bio and all of the updates. They are currently in negotiations. They have a set date for negotiations in the middle of June. So we're going to wish them a great contract, and we're going to stay on top of that and make sure no one's doing any slick shit, aka the owners of Three Brothers Coffee. So yeah, if you want to keep plugged in with them, follow them on Instagram. I'll have that linked in the show notes below. If you would like to support the show, I have a PayPal and a Venmo that will be linked in the show notes. Otherwise, that you can just subscribe on wherever you listen to this podcast. You can rate it on Spotify or Apple Music. You also can leave a little nice review. I would love to see it. It would be very lovely. My review section is so lonely. There's only been a few, so I would love for you to leave a review if you like the conversation or any other conversations. Otherwise, follow me on Instagram if you'd like. Any of those ways would be really great to support the show. And without further ado, this is my conversation with Coffee Workers of the South United with Paige and Charlie. Okay, beautiful. So we're gonna start out with you, each of you respectively, introducing yourself, name, pronouns, and what your position is within this like structure. So if you're an employee at Three Brothers, if you are the representative, catch my drift, if that makes sense. So we can start with Charlie. Charlie, take it on.
My name is Charlie James. I'm a barista at Three Brothers. My pronouns are they, she.
I'm Paige McKay. My pronouns are she, they, and I'm the lead organizer at Three Brothers.
Beautiful. Well, welcome to the show. Thank you guys so much for coming on and speaking the truth. We are talking labor rights today. We are talking about the right to unionize, what that means within a service industry structure, experiences in service in the service industry, which can be a myriad of things. I am currently in it, and I'm sure many people listening know exactly what I'm talking about. So first thing I want to ask is for both of you, tell me about if you have any, I mean, Charlie, you literally work for Three Brothers, but Paige as well. If you, what is your experience in working in the service industry, and how do you feel that this current structure, the current structure of the service industry, mainly being ununionized, lends its hand to people being exploited? And why is it significant to disrupt those labor structures in this type of industry?
Okay, so yeah, I mean, I've worked service industry since I was 16, since I was first legally able to hold a job. I've like done all sorts of work in service industry, and I've been in specialty coffee for a minute now at a couple of different shops, at a Starbucks before that. It's mad precarious is, I think, the general vibe all around.
Totally.
Turnover rates are oftentimes intentionally high, because it's a revolving door to keep wages low, to not provide benefits, for employees. Mm-hmm. It's done so like under the guise of flexibility for the business, workers are commodities to be bought and sold on the marketplace. You sell your hour for $9 mm-hmm. or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, like for me personally, specialty coffee, one of the reasons I gravitated towards it is because with the nature of the service, the price of the goods, the tips are better, and mm-hmm. it's not as bad as something elsewhere. But I mean, the general structure of the game persists, and it's still precarious. I think in a lot of ways, a small business presents its own challenges when, mm-hmm. you know, the typical like machinations of the business, like grinding through people is totally. Like better presented as like a family of mm-hmm. a small staff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so like, yeah, we wanted to kind of disrupt that, put a dam in the stream, so to speak, and say, you know, like, hey, yo, stop pushing us around, stance, like,
totally.
We deserve more. We should be able to go to the doctor, be able to, like, count on a specific amount of pay that allows us to live, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like, I think we were all kind of in tune with like the wave of like labor movement, the wave of like unionization following like, you know, the Great Resignation, as they call it, with COVID and all.
Mm-hmm.
And so with us in our specific like circumstances, we were able to talk about it and say we want to change things.
Hell yeah.
We took some steps in that regard.
Paige, what about you?
Yeah, I think I would just echo a lot of what Charlie said, which is like, I've been in the industry for about 8 years and I've been in mostly restaurants, full service, bars. You know, I've been serving, waitressing. I've done some small amounts of coffee work. And yeah, it's been the same everywhere, I think, where it's like they keep you on low wages so they don't have to pay you because they don't want to pay us. And they want to pass that on to us, essentially, because we're going to be coming in to a different restaurant and giving those same tips to a different waitress. And it's all so cyclical like that. It's just a very damaging cyclical process. And yeah, everything Charlie said, they hit the nail on the head. But they want to keep all of our employee benefits. They want to not let us have any kind of a retirement plan. They want to make sure we have no way out of the industry. I've stayed in it for 8 years. And every year I was thinking until lately, every year, this is my last year. I know this is going to be my last year. Mm-hmm. I went all the way through college thinking it was just a college job. And then the money was too good. So I stayed in and no, it was just, it kept being a means to an end, but there was no end over and over and over. Because there are none of the jobs that we were told there would be when we got out and we all just got stuck. And it's, I heard someone say the other day at my work, they had retired from teaching and they're now just serving full time. And they said, you know, what's insane is like none of the teachers I worked with could come in and do this, but like we could all just like go sit at an office desk all day and be fine. And it's insane how we're treated. I think for me, like the harassment has always been a big problem in the industry. And the structure right now is that your bills are paid based on how much abuse you can take from strangers.
100%.
1,000. Yeah, it's just ridiculous. And especially women, especially right now with women, especially in the South, it's going to get worse. It's already gotten worse. After COVID, customers got worse. And they're going to continue to get worse. And it's just, we shouldn't, they come in to yell at us because they know we don't have an option. We aren't allowed to yell back. They want to scream at someone. I can't tell them to fuck off.
Yeah.
And it's just awful. Besides that, like the sexual harassment is really bad. Harassment from owners, from workers, from management, from whoever. It's just, you really have no alternative to fight back. So that's part of what I think is so important about disrupting this structure is that unions do disrupt that structure. There was something, and I hope I'm not speaking out of turn for one of our other workers at Three Brothers, but they had told me about a specific person who was being like had harassed them a lot and really no, it had just taken too long for repercussions. And that's a big part of like what they're writing into the demands right now is like actual escalation tactics, actual procedures, because we shouldn't be worried that we're going to get fired because we tell someone to stop saying something awful to us.
100%.
Yeah. It's just crazy. But I think there's this thing in gardening. There's this tool that you use. It's this giant fork. And when the ground has gotten too compacted and you can't get a shovel in, you take this giant fork and you shove it down there. And then you don't pick up the soil, but you just loosen it underneath. And you do that a couple more times until you can actually get a shovel in and move it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what, for me, that's what these first coffee shops that are getting unionized in the South are doing. They're that fork.
100%.
And I think they loosened the soil so that we can see real change happening in our industry on a bigger level. And, you know, we had people say, it's a small team, it's a small shop, but that's not the point. The point is, it was the first shop and it showed a lot of people that they can do that. Disruption takes one at a time. And in the South, it's a crawl. It's coming. So
there was a couple things that, that y'all hit on. So the first thing Charlie was talking about how small businesses specifically, because I definitely have experienced this so much, is that family aspect of really selling the whole thing as like, oh well, we as a family can endure so much because we're a family, so it's easier to take on the exploitation or to have the wool pulled over your eyes essentially. And choose to be exploited, or people taking advantage of you and exploiting you and then calling it like family, which is also very triggering for people that have like likely experienced any kind of like gaslighting or anything like that. Which capitalism is just general gaslighting. But
did you ever have family meal? Like, I just felt like that was like,
ew, what? No, what the hell is that? Absolutely not.
The thing like bigger restaurants will do is like they make you all get there like 15 minutes early.
This is making me cringe.
Oh my God. They'll cook these bland ass meals that just like are just, and it's an old tactic of Strategic Hospitality, who lost like $1 million wage theft lawsuit, which was fucking dope. But they'll make you all come together and talk about like what's going to happen that day. And then they'll make you all eat a meal together and they call it family meal. And it always just felt like indoctrination.
I truly have never heard that.
I was like, half the people in this room are sleeping together. It's just like, stop trying to call us a family. Like, this is like Marilyn Manson, like kind of family. Like, please quit.
But also like, it's something that I'm actually very grateful for the manager that at my current job, because they are exceedingly aware that like there is no reason to call what we do as like family, and they're very like stringent on saying like, this is community, it's not your family, and we're not going to treat you like family, because that is just allows so much gray area, and I really appreciate that. But more importantly, I was taken when you said the way that small businesses do like indoctrinate you a lot in that language. It is extremely hurtful, but also like causes you to or puts you in a position to ignore a lot of the exploitation that you endure. And then Paige, something that you were saying at the very end there of, in the Deep South, I wouldn't necessarily consider Tennessee the Deep South, but that's just me coming from East Texas where it is like rootin' tootin' Deep South, but, or Alabama, like you're from, but in the South, it's so interesting. Prior to this, I was, doing my little research on labor unions, and especially in the history in the South, because it is extraordinarily rich history in Appalachia, Kentucky, less this part of Tennessee, but Eastern Tennessee. There are so many traditions of people fighting for their rights under labor structures in the South. And I think right now, like you were saying also, is this kind of like reckoning happening in specifically the service industry. And I can't help but see kind of the connection between, you know, coal mining towns and everyone being employed by this specific company, and everyone kind of having their lives and their quality of life and their like living wages and all of that being dictated by that company. And I see like such a especially in a town like Nashville, where it's so tourist driven, where it's everyone is their ability to live is directly tied to capital, the industry, like the service industry. And I can't help but see like that modern pattern or that modern tie from like that specific labor structure of coal mine towns or paper mill towns or whatever, and then service industry and tourist centric towns as well.
Absolutely. I'm really excited by that point. I think that's a great point. Because like, it's a service-based economy here in this mm-hmm. colonial metropole, mm-hmm. in a place like Nashville. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what the lowest classes are doing now. It's not an industrial manufacturing yeah. economy like it would have been with the original labor movements, you know? So mm-hmm. the real movement has to change in turn with the fluctuations of the economy. But that also means that our struggle is connected to the struggles still going on in industrial manufacturing elsewhere.
Totally. You know, it's
an international struggle.
Totally.
One thing we've talked a lot about in our meetings is, okay, so we're a coffee shop serving expensive lattes to people mm-hmm. in Nashville. Obviously, it's important to better our lives because, you know, we can't go to the doctor. Mm-hmm. We live paycheck to paycheck, mm-hmm. all of these things. When we secure a contract, what does that mean for the indigenous farmers growing
100%, our 100%, you know? 100%, yes.
So that's one thing we've talked about a lot in our meetings. And it's hard when you're just one group of a few people at one shop, you know? Mm-hmm. But it is important that we look at these issues and conceive of these struggles as connected, you know? We are not isolated. We are inspired by, you know, the Starbucks, by the Amazon, and it is all connected, you know? So yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think like on what Charlie said, like we don't win in a vacuum, but like and we don't lose in a vacuum, honestly. And so like when we win, like we need to make sure we're pulling up like everyone else who's like a part of this. Like I loved some of our first meetings, Charlie was bringing up like the farmers, and I was like, this is, yeah, fuck yeah, let's go. Like,
yeah.
And that's what we have to remember is like, you know, the working class is, it's all connected so much deeper than we are with literally in any other way, because it crosses most divides. And
yeah,
when the working class comes, really makes an effort.
Yeah,
I don't think we can be stopped.
Yeah, just to talk more about the interconnectedness of these struggles with a place like, with a small business, environment, you know, like it can be, we talk about opening up channels of communication, distributing power, there's a lot of ways in which like prevailing hegemonic power dynamics like manifest in this environment, and we ourselves can challenge that by which I mean, you know, cicero patriarchy, by which I mean white supremacy, you know, ableism is a huge one. like we in talking with my coworkers and all of this about our different grievances in the day-to-day, like there's so many different streams to the ocean of like solidarity, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So yeah.
Yeah, I always say like there so long as you are working under the guise of capitalism, you are working class. Like, period. And that's like, obviously there are different earning structures and there are different, like there are different, there are, there is exploitation. If you're like, if you are a boss, you are likely exploiting people. But the point is like people that are, that do not have titled power, you are all working class, regardless of like earning, regardless of background, regardless of physical ability, gender identity, sexuality, like whatever. It is across the board, you are all working class. So that is something to immediately identify yourself with. And the second that you start identifying as working class, calling yourself working class, not just blue collar, like this weird 1950s idea of what working class means, like being a plumber, an electrician, whatever the fuck, like those are, those trades are obviously important, like wouldn't have electricity without people who know how to work it. But like, but the point being is that like completely abolish that idea of that blue collar, white collar situation and look at all of it as being, you are working under capitalism, period. Which means we are all on the same playing field of deserving rights.
Absolutely. I mean, this kind of goes back to Marx, right? It matters your relation to the means of production itself.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Okay. We could talk about that for about an hour and a half, which I would be happy to do. But so I want to ask you, it sounds like you, prior to this experience of coffee workers of the South, is that what, that is the correct name for the union, right? Okay, great. So prior to this experience, Paige, you are like the union representative, like you are like person who does this regularly, but I want to know like for Paige, I guess the way to restructure the question to kind of fit your experience would be like, what has been your process of working through with unions? What has it been like to represent workers in the service industry? And then for Charlie, like what has your knowledge about unions prior to this experience been like, and how, what like really was the trigger point to start this process of organizing? And you know, was there a letter of demands? What was this whole process? How was this process formed?
Well, just to like clarify, I'm actually not a union representative. I'm not a union rep at all.
Okay, word. Okay.
I work for a workers' center. Well, I don't work for them. I volunteer at a workers' center, ROC. Mm-hmm. But really, when I got the call about Three Brothers, actually, Cecilia from Workers' Dignity.
Oh, God.
I know. Where would Nashville be without Cecilia Preto? But Cecilia called me and told me that Three Brothers Coffee was looking to unionize.
Oh, wow.
And I got a meeting. I had a meeting with like one of them and then had a meeting with all of them. I guess I can talk about like, I had a meeting with Anthony and then Anthony brought me to the whole group. And so I actually I'm not a union rep at all. I'm just someone who works to organize restaurant workers and loves the work. But this is actually the first place I've unionized or helped unionize. At the end of the day, like I'm just kind of a person with some information and who wants them to do it and is there for their support and to just support them however they want to be supported. Like we've had, since Three Brothers, we've had coffee shops come to us and think they want to unionize. And then, you know, we just tell them, or I tell them like, you know, we're here for you wherever you go. Like if you decide, and they've decided not to unionize sometimes, and we support them in the other areas, other options that they want to go forward. And if they decide to unionize, we'll support them there too. But yeah, I haven't unionized somewhere before. It was a learning process for me as much as it was for them. And Cecilia and Workers' Dignity and all of them over there were great and super helpful and were there every step of the way, which was amazing. So yeah, for me, this was this was a whole learning process. Like, I know a lot from trainings about unionizing, but in practice, I hadn't seen it. So I think I have a lot of thoughts about how organizing and unionizing has to change. I think that the old methods and the old styles don't work at all anymore, especially, but I mean, they worked at one time, but like you said, like, I'm from an old mining town and no one there, if I, like, they know what I do. And like, it's not a happy welcome when I come back. Like, they're not into it.
That's so interesting.
Yeah. Alabama. Well, you know, Reagan came in, yeah. Everything goes back to Reagan. Mm-hmm. And Reagan came in and made everyone, it's yeah. a nuanced point, but you know, everyone now hates unions. And
yeah.
So yeah, that's definitely heavy in heavy Republican towns that were mm-hmm. once pro-union. And mm-hmm. That's where I'm from. So this whole process was very, very strange for me, but it used to work back there the way we would organize, and now it doesn't. And I think that we have a lot of organizers coming from the North and from the West with like the best of intentions, but they have a little bit of a savior mindset with the South. And it's we need you to listen to us because we are not Boston and we are not New York and we are not California. Like,
it's that whole concept of people like assuming that the South is just this fucked up portion of the country that has no history of like doing anything right. You're like, cool, well, you know that like every major civil rights leader like came from the South, so many of them from Alabama, from Georgia, from Kentucky. Like, that's absolutely wild.
And a lot from the women's movements have come from the South, and a lot from the labor movements have come from the South. And it's like most movements start with the most oppressed people, and often in the South where you have super, super poor people who are exploited. And now you're getting this younger generation coming up in the South who are still super poor, super exploited, and aren't tricked into all this like nonsense that like maybe our parents couldn't get out from under, or their parents couldn't get out from under. They're not excusing the nonsense they do, but just being more educated or more aware of the situation. We're able to come at it and be like, oh, fuck this. Like, we're not going to do it anymore. And that's where the movement's going to start. It takes generations. And I mean, I could sit here and go on about the Reconstruction era and the broken promises and the North exploiting the South and turning everybody against each other. But all that to say, it was a learning process. And I think at the end of the day, organizing in the South for me, you face a lot of people who don't realize they're worth fighting for. And a lot of that comes from religious trauma, which most of us have. A lot of us have this religious trauma, so we have to learn that we're worth fighting for, we're worth standing up for, and we're worth asking for more because we deserve it. So you face a lot of that, and then you also just, as an organizer, the most important thing to me was just advocating for these guys and letting them do what they needed to do in whatever direction they decided to go in, telling them like what would probably work best and advising them. But at the end of the day, just being like, whatever you guys want to do, that's what we're going to do. And like, they organized it, and the courage that they showed the whole time was insane. I mean, no one else in Nashville's done it. So like, clearly it took a lot of work. It took a lot of strength and like solidarity. And yeah, for me, it was just learning like, the methods we use don't work. We can't trust those anymore. We just have to be here and advocate for the workers. And if we're not doing that, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
That was a long-winded response.
No, I think it was poignant and it made total sense.
As far as experience with unions prior to this, I had none. Like I said, I've been doing service industry since I was a youngin. This was a learning process for me as well. I've always been a history nerd. I've always loved, I've always been very, very much in pursuit of liberation. And so, for me, it was a chance to be like, hey guys, we have a chance. This is a unique workplace. We have a chance to really do something here, you know? For me, it was an opportunity to kind of flex that and see what could happen.
And
really, it's a lesson in like serendipity. You never know like the people you will meet, the like opportunities that will arise once you're able to, you know, throw an idea out there and share some grievances, you know, exchange a genuine connection with somebody.
Absolutely.
Without kind of that superficial performance of like workplace, you know, coworker sort of thing. Like, hey, I see you. Let's actually, you know, meet each other, you know?
Yeah. There's so much, myself, having the experience of working in the service industry also since I was like 15 or 16. And this year will be my 10-year anniversary. but also, yeah, there is like such a weird culture, and I'm sure it exists in other industries as well, but particularly in service industry, the idea of we're expecting to always like feel like shit, or like always expecting to be exhausted, always expecting to be in many cases always expecting to be depressed, always expecting to have this like burden of just like existing within the service industry, but also just being like, me too sis, or like, me too, like whatever, like always just being like, yeah, I'm feeling it too, but then not like you saying like, I see you, like as in like my comrade, we are like together, we are both experiencing legitimate exploitation, and I see that you are hurting because of this. I am hurting, and having a genuine connection in there.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And not only is your pain my pain, but our capacity to change things is dependent on actually doing it together. You know, we can do, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Was it met with a lot of trepidation from the other employees? Like, what did this process of like find, like creating a list of what you wanted like out of this unionizing, what did you expect, or what were you expecting the owners to sign on to? Or I know that you're in negotiations now, so that's still kind of up in the air, but like how did you come to like the wants out of this union?
We had some conversations about power structures, about channels of communication. This is, you know, between me and some coworkers, specifically at the shop, the way that way that things are structured there, the questions of access and inclusion, really, who's invited to hear information and who's excluded. That was an initial conversation before any of us kind of sparked the U word, you know, like that. And then of course just how fucking difficult it is to live, you know, how expensive Nashville is, all of that, being able to, so yeah, we had a couple conversations about that, and it takes some time, you know, doesn't all happen in one fell swoop.
Yeah,
but you know, you plant some seeds, somebody comes back to you with like, hey, what about this? I don't know about this. And you're like, huh, that's a good point. Well, what do you think about if this happened, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of bounce, challenge each other in that regard.
Totally.
And then you're like, hey, we should meet up outside of work.
Yeah, totally.
And talk about this in more depth, you know?
Yeah.
It's just a slow, gradual process of kind of, I think with our specific shop, mm-hmm. It's a unique situation in so far as it's mostly like 20 somethings,
mm-hmm.
A 30-year-old, you know,
mm-hmm.
All behind the bar. There is a culture of like, yeah, life sucks. I want to kill myself. Capitalism is ruining my life.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
Just need somebody to be like, okay, so what are we going to do?
Exactly. Know? Yeah.
Maintaining that.
Yeah. Like, let's do something, you know?
Totally.
I feel like that's so prevalent in restaurants too, because it's just like, okay, so we're just going to like keep letting it ruin our lives. And everyone's right. Just so, like you mentioned, Safar, everyone's so tired and beat down
yeah.
because we're expected to be that all the time because you're often holding like two jobs at least.
Yeah.
And you're just so tired and beat down. You're like, I don't want the trouble because it does take a lot of work. I don't want the mm-hmm. trouble, the work. And they're just like, fuck it, whatever. Like, I've made it this far and like, I'll die yeah. in debt. The same exact culture where we're just like making jokes because we're miserable. And we don't see a way out, but like, there are yeah. ways out.
Totally.
And you all band together. Like, it's not impossible.
Totally. Yeah.
So we have these conversations. We met outside of work. Fern obviously was put in touch with Paige. It was a kind of serendipitous moment of, hey, I know this person, they might be able to answer some questions,
mm-hmm.
which is beautiful. And you never know what can happen until you actually do have these conversations.
100%.
And then it's just a matter of meeting and being like, okay, are we going to do it? Everyone's like, yeah, we're going to do it. And then
amazing.
You know, you got to keep that steam. We wrote out a letter demanding recognition of our union. We mm-hmm. You can make your own name. Make a name for your union, you
yeah.
know? Got connected with UFCW
mm-hmm.
For that purpose and kind of went down that route. I do think it's important, though, that, like, kind of like what Paige was saying, these old heads, the old ways of doing things aren't gonna save you. You know,
yeah.
It's really about the people you're surrounded by.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about existing power structure. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like, you know, being aligned with the AFL-CIO or any sort of thing. It's about yeah. what are the needs of the people I'm surrounded by every day, like
mm-hmm.
what can we do? What do we want to do?
Mm-hmm.
And your power as a collective body still exists, you mm-hmm. know, like you got to recognize the power you have as a unit, you know?
Yes, absolutely. Well, that kind of makes me, or it makes it an easy transition to this kind of last couple of questions. I feel that in many ways I bet it is difficult for people to see the valid the validation or the like even remote valid reason to unionize at a job that is always marketed to you or marketed in kind of the psychology of the industry as temporary. But we were saying like way in the beginning when y'all were talking about your experiences, well, all three of us have been in the service industry in one way or another for 8 to 10 years. And there is always this sensation of like, oh, you know, it's not forever, or I'm only going to do this for X amount of years or whatever. But you find yourself still there for better, or for worse. And for some people it works better for them and some people doesn't, whatever. But, you know, that has this, there's always this feeling of like, if you're presented this option of unionizing and fighting for a union, which is more than just, you know, as you've been saying this whole time, it's more than just kind of filing some paper, writing a letter to the owners, whatever. This is like, it has to come from an abolitionist mindset. It has to come from this fully intersectional mindset. And I imagine, or if you can say if you have or not, but do you feel that there is like pushback or a sense of invalidation when organizing for a union for something that is like a part-time gig? And do you feel that because of this kind of temporary nature that people either psychologically or legitimately find themselves in, are less inclined to fight for their own rights? And you kind of been saying this whole time throughout this interview, but, you know, how do we encourage people to, you know, take the film out of the eyes or see through different lenses of like the importance of solidarity and creating these intersectional structures to uplift and possibly organize, or just see, you know, see the job for what it is, or see these structures and these systems for exactly what they are, which are exploitive.
I think there's like a two part to that, and they're like totally two sides of the same coin on this, because it's like, these structures of it seeming like a part-time or a gig or whatever, that's like fully created by the owners. It's fully created by capitalism. They want us to feel like it's temporary. Our pain is temporary. Mm. Our exploitation is temporary. Mm. So that we're less inclined to fight, because there's some kind of like, one day they're going to save us and bring us up to them. And it's like, yeah, obviously they're not. And we know that. But I think there's just so many generations that haven't let go of that, and
totally,
it's just like been the only time trickle down has ever worked is like with exploitation.
Totally.
It's just trickled down.
Absolutely.
So I think that like remembering that things like GigPro, which if you don't know what that is, that's where people can get on an app now. Mm. Fucking Sean Brock, workers' hero, created this thing that makes it terribly hard to do collective bargaining, because a restaurant can, if they have a dishwasher call out, they can just get on there and hire somebody, often preying on homeless people in these apps.
Whoa.
Will just come in for one shift, untrained, host, bartender, cook, server, dishwasher, whatever. They'll just hire them. They'll come in for one shift. They'll take a large portion of their pay. And then that's you never have to talk to them again. So it makes it hard to collectively bargain, because like maybe you have a dishwasher that's there 3 out of the 4 days of the week, but the other 4 days are gig pro people. So if you're not on the 3 days with the other dishwasher and you're trying to collectively bargain, then you're not going to, and it's just, they don't want to hire full-time people. And because then they have to like give them health insurance and like treat them well. And, you know, because if you're just doing it, it's gig pro is becoming, it's like this smaller version of what we're doing, where they're just like, I only have to keep this person for one day, so they're not going to fight me on things,
right,
on change. But for us, they make us believe that this is temporary, and it's not. And I think once you're at a restaurant for a couple of years, you start to see that. But then on the other side of that coin, talking about how to get people to understand that things have to change, to an extent, I kind of feel like the owners do that for us, the way that they get, you know, like I worked at restaurants where strategic hospitality got organized because the owners were stealing wages and they just got too greedy and started like,
Jesus Christ,
doing it. Yeah, they did it too big, and it was just like they were getting away with it, and then they just got too greedy, and it's like y'all never would have gotten caught if you hadn't, like, if my checks hadn't been wrong every time I got a check.
Jesus.
Like, yeah, like it's just, so like they're kind of doing, they're doing a lot of the hard work. It's like the Amazon labor. The guy who did the Amazon labor said, like, we want to thank Jeff Bezos for being up in space because we're signing, he was gone.
Yeah,
like, you're helping us. You're giving us all the reasons we need. People are seeing through this bullshit. I think the maybe only good thing about the last couple of years is the fact that people are realizing that they shouldn't have been treated like that. And now that a lot of people were off for some amount of time, especially in the restaurant industry and in the service industry, now they're coming back and being like, holy crap, I wasn't I wasn't exploited. Like, my body got to rest a small amount, and
absolutely,
now I see the difference, and like my brain got to rest.
Absolutely.
Come back. And I've gotten really frustrated with this mentality of like being short-staffed, and I finally like lost it on somebody one time. I was just like, hey, a lot of people fucking died,
yeah,
and they were mostly working class,
yeah,
Like, we're not wanting to work. There are less of us to work, motherfucker. Yeah. Like, what do you
mean? Literally, statistically, there are less. Yeah.
There are less, and it's the working class that died. Like, I'm so sorry that you let your workers die. That seems like that's a you problem. I can't believe you're putting it on us.
Totally.
But, like, yeah, so I think it's important that you just, and I think Charlie will speak to this because Charlie does it too, and I do it at my job and every job I've ever had, which is, you just got to keep pointing it out. You got to keep saying like the quiet parts out loud. You got to start saying like the stuff that you know is bothering everyone else and is hurting everyone else, just not letting them turn a blind eye to it. Just being like, oh my God, you shouldn't be allowed to be talked to like that.
Absolutely.
Like, a customer shouldn't be able to say that to you. You shouldn't have to worry about rent. You shouldn't have to, just because we're having a slow day doesn't mean we have to worry. We should worry about like our paychecks not being enough for what we're used to. And, you know, there are other options, and just like kind of talking about it. And I think reminding them that there are other ways and that you have their back and you're supportive. Like, I've seen a lot of change in people just when something has happened and like I've been there for them, which wasn't a ploy trying to like get them to organize.
Totally.
But it's like when our manager or owner is just like, fuck it, you're on your own now.
Yeah.
And the rest of the staff is like, oh no, we got you, don't worry. It's like, you know, you see a difference. So I think just like cultivating that community of support, but also like saying the quiet parts out loud, talking about the injustices between like race and class and gender and sexualities and all of this, and just continuing to bring it up and not shutting the fuck up about it, really, is like, I think the end of it. Showing them there's a real way. Yeah, I just think you got to show them the way. Sorry, I was a long-winded again.
No.
Okay. Yeah, we were talking about the temporary nature of the temporary nature of the work, dissuading people, making people trepidatious. There's this quote, I can't remember who it's by, but it's basically socialism never took hold in America because workers there view themselves as temporarily embarrassed millionaires rather than working class, you know? And I mean, it, like, we talked about this earlier too, like, generally in cities now, which is where most people live, where more and more people are moving to, like, we see a service-based economy. We see service industry as like the prevailing, you know, work for workers, you know. And yeah, I think for some people it's a matter of killing the manager, or killing it, like, you know, ignoring the manager in your head,
who's
you know, wanting to score brownie points and say how high at every at every, you know, demand to jump, you know. Like, I think you have to align yourself with like the people around you actually engaged in the work, actually going through it, you know, with, and see your connectedness in that struggle, or in see the connectedness of your respective struggles in with their, you know, unique flares. As far as the temporary nature of it goes, if you get a good bunch of people, that shit will change your life, you know. At least speaking for myself, speaking for, I know Anthony never anticipated this happening when we were working together. He was very straightforward when he was like, I don't know if I'm gonna be here in a couple months, you know. But I'm down to support y'all how I can. Yeah, and he's leaving the shop. We're still trucking along. He's still supporting us all along the way. Like it is still very possible to like make these things happen. As long as you recognize the need for it and like are surrounded by people who, you know, give you life to do it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's something that also, I was thinking about prior to coming into this call, but I was thinking about that question too, as somebody who also works service industry, and to be very transparent and honest, also has trepidations of bringing up the idea of unionizing to my own shop. Because not, you know, having to check myself in thinking, am I glorifying this job because of how fucking terrible my previous job was? You know, granted, I will be like I would say that the pay at my current job is better than 90%, if not the top 99% of Nashville's coffee shops, which is great. But and you know, the culture that we have there is very specific and very supportive and blah, 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 blah. But to be transparent, like I have these, I am very pro union. That's why I'm speaking to y'all. Like workers' dignity, I literally like, I look up to them and just how they organize and how like brilliant they are in how they just are able to communicate to their communities of what, like how important they are as living people and like their rights and all of that. But you know, there is still parts of me that I still have to look at, and be like, hey, why are you afraid to do that? If you wanted to, you are empowered to do so. But all of this to say is, I think what I was thinking about today was, you know, when you form this union, and even if you are like in a position like Anthony, where he's like, I don't think I'm going to be here for that long or whatever, being able to be that support and also knowing that you're doing the work for people that are coming in after you. Like you are providing a built-in support for the minute someone walks in through the door of being a new employee. And that to me was like, oh, that's everything. Because you are literally abolishing power structures and then inputting a structure of support and knowledge that you are like, you know, maybe they're not cherished by the owners. Like, you know, the owners can still like not be happy about having to give people things, but still like you are valued and like you have something to, that reminds you that you have intrinsic value through your labor, like that you as a laboring person are like protected in some way. I think that that's such a powerful thing to be able to do. It's almost like, it's almost kind of like generational wealth, that you are like able to pass on these like support structures that allow somebody to like work in some kind of safety or some kind of stability. That's just something that I was thinking about, of like thinking of it in almost like a generational wealth thing.
I love that.
Yeah.
I think it's important to remember too, like when you're thinking about anyone out there that might be listening to this, thinking about like, well, fuck, like would I ever want to like organize my own workplace? Like, is it really worth it? All this kind of like, and what you're really about, like those are super valid concerns. Like everything is, you know, I totally get it. I felt those concerns before. But like in a city like Nashville, in a place like the South, you're not even just doing it for your workplace and you're doing it. And for the people coming after you, you're doing it for everyone in the city, because all the workers in the city, they're not going to do it. Someone had to be the first. And when I met Three Brothers, I was like, they have a real, all of them at Three Brothers, I was like, oh shit. Like this is like a real, real shot. This could actually happen. And so I was like, damn, like we got to make this happen, because if this happens, it's just a matter of time to the next one. When the next one happens, it's just a ball that started rolling. When you organize a shop, you're standing up for all workers, specifically in the South. And I think that's just so important.
Huge thank you again to Paige and Charlie for joining me in this conversation, for doing the work that they do. I'm sure that it is really scary to be one of the first. And like Paige was describing in that metaphor with using a gardening tool, the hoe, sometimes you have to be the one to loosen that soil and crack into the soil and loosen up so that other people can put in a shovel and be able to do it with more ease. Also, like, people who are doing this, people who are unionizing, like, yes, it is for yourself because you want better in your workplace, but also this is for anybody who walks through the door of that workplace as a new hire, or somebody coming back. Like, you're guaranteeing them a base level to sustain themselves. And that's the goal, right? Like, under capitalism, the goal is just to sustain yourself. And so that's really incredible that Paige and Charlie took it upon themselves and the other people that are organizers within it. It is really incredible that they found the power to be able to do that and see it through. And they are in the middle of negotiations now. So we are going to wish them a very good contract. And yeah, I hope everything is going to go well for them. I'll continue to support them. You can also support them. All of that will be listed below in the link description. Other than that, you are able to support the show by rating it or subscribing to it or leaving a review. All those things are available on Apple Music or Spotify. You can send me PayPal or Venmo if you feel so inclined. Also linked below. Other than that, I have nothing else. And thank you so much for tuning in, and I will see y'all next time.